V'chein kolchei asher kol ish Yisrael machnis belibo chas v'shol neish zora. And any sin which a person will put into his heart, a strange fire, because of anger. If you become angry, the anger itself is putting the wrong stuff into your heart. The Talmud says anyone who is angry, it's as if he worships idolatry. Okay, there's a lot behind that, but it's like you're putting an idol in your temple. Oshore tavis ros rachmanos, and other lustful notions. Halahu mamish kinyan hakosav. It's like the text says, base kut shena v'tifaretenu, our temple, our glory, asher hayu l'sreifas eish. It was brought to fire. We burnt our own temples. Harachmis barach shmo yetzlin. Hashem should have mercy on us. This is what the prophecy of Ezekiel's prophecy, the third temple, is. When then God says, it's Mekom Kisi, the place of my seat, Asher Eshkan Shom Besoch B'nei Yisrael Yolam, which I will dwell there amongst these people forever, will be forever. V'lo Yitamu Od Beis Yisrael Shem Kachu. And the Jewish people will no longer make my temple unholy. Not talking about Titus. Jewish people. Beast knew some with their promiscuous idolatry. It's not going to happen anymore from the Jewish people when the Messiah comes. Ata, but now, Yerachakos knew some. Have them push away their morality. And then, V'shachanti B'sochmo, I'll be able to dwell there forever. That's exactly what the prophet's saying. What Chaim is saying over here. That's what the prophet means. We destroyed God's temple through our immorality.
Right.
Our immoral thoughts. To bring immorality into the highest temple.
Let's go to the third temple.
To the what?
The third temple, when we talk about the
Messiah. So he's saying we will no longer do that.
It means that we are going to be better.
We will be better. We'll have the knowledge to not make these mistakes anymore. When the third temple we've built, the world will be filled with knowledge, and we won't be fooled by imagery that the Yetzer gives us. We'll see things, we'll have clarity, and we won't make these mistakes.
But isn't it that we have to be better before it's built down here?
Yeah, so that's part of it. But when the third temple is built, we will have reached that level. We will have reached that level. And all the small print for the rest of the pages really is everything I spoke out. So we could skip all that and go to the bottom of page Yud, second last paragraph where the bold print is. We can skip all, because most of those ideas are in the small print. So page Yud, second last paragraph. So now we're going to see something very interesting now. We're going to go back to a line in Chumash. Ubezeh yuvan hakosav. Now we can understand what it says in the second chapter of Genesis. It says, Vayitzar Hashem Elokim et ha'adam ofer. Hashem formulated man out of dust. So you got this image here. Vayipach ba'apov nishmas chayim. He blew into man a living soul. Vayehi ha'adam lenefesh chaya. And man was a living soul. That's what the Torah says. Now, what's the simple meaning of the text? Upshuta shel mikra, the simple meaning of the text, vadehu katargumo. It's like the targum, the Aramaic explanation is, that what does it say? Bahavas ba'adam l'ruach memalala. Meaning to say that man became a speaker. Man could speak. The end result of the spirit of life, which was blown into man, is personified by man's power of speech. That's what the classical commentaries say. It says man was now a living soul, means he was a communicative individual. The power of speech is the greatest reflection of man's soul. If you want to know more about that, Pirkei Avos class, tape number 17. We dealt thoroughly with that topic this week at the Downtown Lunch and Learn, and up north as well. But anyway, that's clear. The ideas of speech and communication, they bring forth that which comes from the soul. Porpoises can communicate, but they don't communicate what's in their soul. The human being's power of speech, it comes directly related to the soul. It's directly out of the soul. So that's the simple meaning. Veratzalomer, meaning to say, Shekasher hayaguf levado, when man was just a goylem, was just a hunk of clay without his soul, he was in the dust with no movement, nothing. When it was breathed in a living soul, he was made a living human being to move around and to speak. That's what the soul gave him, the power of speech. Look in the Ramban, who gives a different commentary. But he has a very interesting question. very interesting point he makes. The grammar is very bad. Let's go back. It says what? God blew in a spirit into man. Vayehi ha'adam. And the man was a living soul. Is that the right way it should be said? It says, and man was a living soul. What should you have written? You have this. He contained a living soul. What should it say? And there was in man a living soul.
But maybe the fact the soul lives.
It should have said there was in man a soul. In man was a soul. Why say, and man was a soul?
This is a living
soul.
Man's a soul?
Yes.
He's saying a living soul, the soul lives through man.
No, but what? He was there before the soul.
Sure, but living.
So now he has within himself the living soul. There is in man. Let's look how he asks. He says like this. Amnam bat bakra, the text says, Bayehi ba'adam loksiv. It doesn't say that into the man was a living soul, that God put into the human a life spirit. It should say there was in man a life spirit. It should have said, Vayehi ba'adam. There was in man a spirit of life, which would have been the exact what happened. God blew in soul, so there is in man a spirit of life. That would be an accurate wording. But it doesn't say that. It says, Ela Vayehi ha'adam. The man was a living soul. What do you mean it was a living soul? He's got a body too. He's got a body too. There should say, there is in man a living soul. Text doesn't say that. The text says, man is a living soul. What does that mean? So he says like this, Lazos yeshmokam lefosho alpish shenisbar. But the way we've been saying until now you can understand the text good and well. Sheha Adam, that man, benishma sachaim shebesocho, with the living soul that is within him. Listen to this. Hu nase nefesh, he becomes a living soul for chaya liribui olamas ein mispar, for all the different worlds. Man becomes the soul of all the worlds. By virtue of the soul that man has, man becomes the soul of the entire world. That's what the text is saying. And man became a soul. Just like we understand within a body, there's a soul that moves the body. It's going to say it right now. Shekemo shekol prata en hagas hagufu tnuosav. The fact that a body moves and acts, right? Where's that from? Huayedei koach hanefesh shebekirbo. It's because of the soul that's inside. All of man's functions are because of his soul that's inside of him. Without your soul, you wouldn't move.
But also that.
Wait. Let me just finish the point, then you can ask. Right? So just like we know within a human being, what moves the human being? It's the soul. It's the soul in the human being that moves the human being. So you know what the Torah is saying now, that you have a human being with a soul? Kein ha'adam ta'apayudav. So man, hu ha'koach v'nefesh ha'chaya shal oylomos elyonim v'tachtonim le'in shir. Man is the living soul of all the worlds without any limit. Shekula misnagi mal yodo. They're all controlled by man. This is what he's saying. In other words, what has he been saying till now? Man is in the Tzelem Elohim, the image of God. What's the image? What's God? God is all powerful. God moves everything. So he says, you know what? Man's the same way. When did that happen in man? When God blew the soul into man. So the text should have said, man, and there was in man a living soul. The man has a living soul in him. True. But the Torah is being much more profound. It doesn't stop there. By virtue of the fact that man has a soul, and he's going to explain it in the next chapter. Why? But because man has a soul, man becomes the soul of the entire world. And just like within the man himself, there's the soul that is the force behind everything in the body. So look at the entire universe and the spiritual worlds and everything that's out there. What moves all of that? Man. And therefore man is the soul of the world. And that's what the Torah is saying, being more accurate. Man is the soul of the world. Okay.
The soul was in man, and when God is in the soul, he blew in the awareness.
Okay, so the truth is, when he says, look in the Ramban has an approach that's similar to what you say. But he's not going with that approach. There are other ways to understand this text that are less classical. He's going with the classical approach. And with the classical approach, he's saying there are other ways to understand it. And the two don't have to necessarily be contradictory. They could be, but there is. He says, that's why he just says, look in the Ramban. It's commentary of the Torah. So you're touching on the idea. It's a little more complex, but you're on the tracks of what Ramban is saying. But clearly, what he's saying is very, very clear. That's obvious what he's saying. So isn't this unbelievable now? What we are now? We are the soul of the entire world. All the worlds. Why? Because of the soul that's in us. How that happens, that's what chapter 5 is going to articulate for us. Okay?
Just a moment. When God created the Adam and blew the nefesh into his nostrils,
yeah,
his soul, right?
Yeah.
It was the Adam for every human.
Well, there was only one human being.
Right, that we all come from there, Jews and non-Jews.
Adam, first man, was all of humanity.
Now, God
whatever, he was all of humanity.
All the humanity.
It was only one being. Even if you want to say an android, man, male, female, together, whatever, but that was called Adam. So, whatever the hope of humanity would have, whatever humanity would ever become, is all in that first person.
Right.
And therefore, all of humanity was the soul of the entire world. Now, man is born again, soul is brought into every human being. So now all of humanity, the millions of people in the world, Jewish people, the way it becomes defined, are the ones who are the soul of the entire worlds. We are all part of that.
Well, and we say that God always creates over and over and over,
that's right?
Right. Now, when a person is born, then when is this soul given to us?
I have to review that. There's different times when that's exactly happening. I have to review that.
Because I can't imagine that a young child with no idea...
No, certainly at birth it's there. Certainly at birth it's there. There's questions, when during pregnancy is it in there? When during pregnancy it's in there. I got to review it. I went through it once. I got to review it.
Then you understand that a small child, even a child that is just born, has the same power as an adult that knows what's right and wrong.
Well, only when it reaches cognition. But it's potential power.
That's interesting.
It's potential power. Can't do anything yet. Once it reaches cognition, then it counts. And clearly, we would have to say by bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah, that's when it counts in its most meaningful way, because that's when the choices are more clear.
The human life cycle recapitulates some of this whole idea, because it's only when you've got the idea of what to do with what your potential that you can realize it. The person's life itself is a realization of this whole idea you're talking about.
Right. The truth is, until your bar mitzvah, more of the animal of you manifests itself, and less of the soul. Although it's there, it's dormant, so to speak, till you gain wisdom and able to access it and appreciate what you have, and then you're able to use it. You're able to act upon it. That takes time. But it's even during pregnancy, there's different stages of I have to go over. I'm not fresh on that. I'll have to go over that example. Okay, so we've done the first four chapters. The question is, are we prepared to start chapter 5 or looking at the clock?
Yeah.
Because this is the heavy stuff starts now. I mean, the really heavy stuff starts. We could start it, or what do you want to do? We'll start? Okay, we'll go as far as we go. If we stop in the middle, we stop in the middle. We'll give it a try, okay? Okay, so now, we've come to the point where a human being is the soul of the entire world. Now, what do we mean by this, and how does that connection take place? So we start chapter 5. The purpose of chapter 5 is to explain and define in two ways how we understand through the structure of the human being and his makeup and how he was created that in fact his actions are able to make these effects. We will get the explanation of how, you'll know the mechanics now. The mechanics of how it is that the human being is so powerfully effective over all the worlds, and how this works. So we'll try. This is where you're going to lose your minds. Umasha also bersono yisbarach shemo, and that which came to God's mind, to what? Laharki v'sa'odam atachton, to connect this lowly person, l'rashei ha'olamas elyonim, to the highest of worlds, spiritual worlds, she yisnagu al yado, that they are ruled by man. Very interesting word choice. Not only are the worlds affected by man, but Reb Chaim says they are directed by man. Okay? You can have something that exists and performs completely normal, and you can affect some kind of change in the normal function of the thing. But that's not what Reb Chaim's saying over here. Reb Chaim's saying that they, all the worlds, are directed by man. Their entire existence is totally directed by the actions of a person.
Yaakov fights with the angel, and at that point then is this disclosure that man is higher than the angel, so to speak. Is it, wouldn't that have been known already before? I mean, up to that, what's the added value of that particular development at that point?
In
the connection to the man having this higher power?
I'd have to think about that. The real lesson of that is how everything is part of the unity of God. What Yaakov gains in that fight is how he understands that even the Yetzirah is on the payroll of the Almighty.
Right, but he's accorded that higher awareness, being higher than the angels, in a sense, is he's affecting the angels.
Oh, because he has this awareness of what he's able to accomplish.
And therefore he can affect
what he's able to accomplish, right?
But he didn't have till then.
Right. So now the question that Reb Chaim has to answer is, how does it happen? How did it arrive in God's will? How did it work that the human would have such meaning in terms of his actions to direct the worlds this way? So this is what he starts to say. Ki yadua b'zohar, we know in the Zohar, uvikisvei ha'arizal, and in the writings of the Arizal. Arizal is the acronym for Rabbi Yitzchak Luria. Okay, he was one of the great mystical Kabbalists in the 1500s who brought out the meaning of the Zohar in its greatest way. And Arizal stands, Ari is Aleph Reishud, Elokai, the godly Rebbe Yitzchak. That's Ari. Also, lion. Ari is a lion, mm-hmm. But it's acronym for Ari, what his name was. That's the Arizal, who was the greatest revealer of the mysticism in this half of the millennia. I'm sorry?
Zion Lamed is the normal Zion Lamed.
Zal, of blessed memory. Zecher Levracha. Remember him for blessing. Arizal. He's called the Arizal or the Ari, or the Ari HaKadosh. The Holy Ari. So that's what we're talking about. Rav Isaac Luria. Okay? Also a person who lived a very short lifetime. He didn't make it till 40 either. Him and Lazzaro. They both didn't live long. Great people didn't seem to live long.
The paradigm, the Nusach is called
Nusach Arizal. Yeah, he brings a lot of mysticism into this. So when he writes about Beseder Hishtalshalush, that's a tongue twister. Hishtal shalus v'hiskash rus ha'olamos. When he talks about, these are two ideas he's saying over here. He's giving us the mechanism in this paragraph. The hishtal shalus, that the worlds are interconnected. That's hiskashus rather. And hishtal shalus, they're progressively created one underneath another. We'll explain all this. Shekol olam hu misnag, that every world is directed. The Seder Matzavo, all its arrangements of its conditions, the Chol Prote Inyonov, and its order of behaviors, it's all directed, Kifi Nitias Koach Ha'olam Sha'olov, based on its predetermined to a certain degree by the world that's above it. Sheman Higo, that it conducts it, Kineshama Saguf, just like a soul conducts a body. And it goes one world above another world, until the Almighty, who's the soul of all that. Okay, so we need a lot of explanation over here. A lot of explanation. This is, we get the basic Jewish mysticism over here. Some that we've talked a little bit about, some we'll talk a little bit more about it. And I got a number of pages on this, so we've got to get it in one sitting, or it just, you know, we're hanging like nuts. Okay, when we talk about the creation of the world, okay, one of the concepts that the world was created with, as we say, it was created with a tremendous amount of tzimtzum. That's the buzzword. That's the buzzword. Tzimtzum, which means constrainment of God's energies. That's how the world came into creation. If God would have given his entire flow of energy into the creation of this world, we would not know the world as a physical world as we know it today. It would be impossible. The entire phenomena of a physical world is a result of a tremendous amount of tzimtzum, of constrainment, of ruchnius, of spirituality. And it had to be held back in a tremendous way, this essence of God, in order to create a world that was as physical as this one is. Okay? So, in other words, the fact that millions of human beings don't believe that there's any direction of God in this world is but a manifestation of this tzimtzum, of this constrainment. Alright? In other words, had the world not been created with a tremendous amount of constrainment of that energy, what would have happened? It would have been obvious to everybody that God is involved behind everything that's in the world. Alright? The fact that it's difficult for the humanity to recognize the fact that God is so intimately involved in everything, and you have to study about it, and you have to have faith in this, right? That's an indication of the phenomena of how much of this presence, of God's presence, is absence in an active way from this world, and that we can't see it unless we study it. That's what we said before. The world, olam, world, comes from the root helem, which means hidden. How is God hidden? In the fact that the energies were constrained at the creation of the world. Right? Tell a normal person, tell a normal non-Jewish or Jewish person who doesn't know any of this stuff, and say, well, you know, everything that exists in front of you is by the will of God. If the will of God would be suspended for one moment, this bus stop would vanish in front of your eyes. They think you're crazy. Okay? The whole world in the physical way, we know it, right? And how we take the physical existence for granted is a result of this tzimtzum. Okay, now a lot of you say that's circular reasoning. But we're not working from logic right now. What? No, this is what the tradition is. This is what the Kabbalah is telling us over here. And, you know, there is a logic, an overall logic to the whole thing. Okay? So now when God, so that's one point. You start off a world with God, which is total spirituality. You come to a world of physicality. There's got to be some way that happened. So the general word is, and the Reb Chaim really will go to town this in the third gate. In the third gate is when he really gets really mystical. Here he's just telling you a little bit, and that's all we're going to get. We're not going to get really heavy.
That's what we are not doing.
Heavy over it. Well, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. If I do it in the morning, guys, then I'll do it with you. We'll see. But anyway, that's the first idea. There has to have been symptom. There has to have been constrainment. If not, we couldn't have a physical world. It's just not possible. Now, when God created this physical world with its symptom, he didn't just take the highest energies of God, constrain them, and boom, here comes the world into existence. Didn't work that way. This is what we call now, there was a progression that God created, in which he created a world under the very essence of himself, which only had a little bit of tzimtzum, which only had a little bit of constrainment. A little bit of God's energies was constrained, but a lot of godliness was very pervasive through that first world, so to speak. Then, from that world came another world, which has a little bit more tzimtzum, a little constrainment of that world. And there's a progression of each world, each one being a tzimtzum, a constrainment of the previous world that was before it. This is what Reb Chaim means when he calls hishtalshelus ha'olamos, this progression of worlds, the tzimtzum of one world from the world above it. The first world was created with the least amount of constrainment. That was the very first world God created. World after world being created on the basis of the world before it, with a little more tzimtzum, Each world as you go down has more tzimtzum than the world before it. When you get to the bottom of the rung, you come to this world. That's the world we live in, has the greatest amount of tzimtzum.
Why was it needed?
Well, there's a lot of different ways to say it. It doesn't really matter right now. We'll see. He talks about four general worlds with many, many worlds within these four general worlds. It doesn't really matter. There can be thousands of worlds. It can go, worlds within worlds within worlds. So it really can get too mind-boggling. But just realize there's progressions. That's all. For right now, that's all you got to know. That's all you got to know. So the example we gave before was what? The famous example is of the Transformers. That's the best example. I've never heard a better way of right? I said this already in this class, didn't
yeah.
I? The Transformers, right?
I don't have this class.
If you want to have a vacuum cleaner and you want to run real well, you know what you do? You plug it right into the main power plant, right?
Yes.
And watch it fry, right? Mm-hmm. So what do? You make a transformer. You transform to reduce the flow of energy from the main power plant. Now one transformer is not going to be enough. You probably have to make a dozen transformers till it finally gets to your house, till you get to the circuit breakers and your own box and all the things that happen. So you're reducing the power amount that just a little bit of that real energy comes, and then your vacuum cleaner can run properly. But is that really the extent of the power that's there? There's so much more power that's there. So the same way, every one of these worlds should be looked at as a spiritual transformer. That's the best parable I've ever heard to describe how you can have some idea of what's going on over here.
And so the transformer is a constrainment also, too.
Exactly. And that's why when we say the world was created with 10 utterances, all right, this gets into the spherot, those are different worlds in which there's more constrainment. There's a lot to talk about. The whole idea of speech, why is it an utterance? And God said, what do I need God to say? Who is he talking to? The whole idea of speech is a reductionist concept. Speech only gives a little bit of what's in the mind. Right? Your brain is brimming with ideas. What does your speech automatically do? Reduces what's coming out as a reduction of what's in there. So when the Torah uses the word God spoke, it's just alluding to the fact that God created through reduction. That's what it means, the world was created through 10 utterances. That's a whole half-hour shmooze right there. I just gave you a little sidebar over there. Okay? But that's part of the idea. Okay? So you have all these worlds. So this is the first idea. Hishtalshalus. The emanations of the progressions of the worlds. That's idea one. Yeah?
Why did God need it? It's for our own benefit to have this gradual. Are we going to go up higher through this gradual? Why God could have just simply...
Listen, God, why? Okay, for right now, we'll just say he did it that way, and that's all.
All
right? All right? With his infinite wisdom,
okay.
He did it that way. We'll just leave it at that for now. Okay?
We'll
just leave it at that. But it's again, that's why I use the simple parallel. If it would be that close, he could have done it that way, but to make him more removed.
All right.
And make the struggle greater, so to speak. That's the first idea. Second idea is called Hiskashru Solamos. Being that each world was created as a symptom of a world before it, there now has to be a second point. There has to be a connection. There has to be a relationship between this world and the world that was above it. There has to be some relationship, not just a constraint, there has to be some kind of relationship. To the point that we say that the world above it is like the soul of the physical world beneath it. In other words, each world is like a soul of the world that is the constrainment of that world that's beneath it. In other words, since every world subsequent is a tzimtzum, is a downplay of the world before it, so each world is related as the direct product of the world that's above it. To the point that we say that what happens to the world which is directly above your world will affect in a most meaningful way the world that is below that. And you got, let's say, 10 worlds, whatever amount you want to say, right? So world number 9 will be directly affected by what's going on in world number 10. That's directly above it in terms of spirituality that's in there. Because each world is just a constrainment of what was in the world beforehand. Okay? So obviously each world affects the world beneath it. obviously the world that has the most effect is the top world. Top world is going to affect all the other ones below, but the one on the very bottom is affected by each one that's on top of that, right? But the one that defines most directly what happens to this world is the one that's right above it. But they're ultimately all affected by the highest world. There has to be this impact, all right? So what comes out? This world is the physical world. One level higher than this world is a category of something that would be considered like a neshama for this world, like a soul for this world. Because this is a more physical manifestation what was before. So the world above is like a soul of this world.
The world above is affecting the world below, or the world below?
Yeah, no. Well, eventually we'll see how the world below will affect, but forget about that right now. Right now it's just the world above affects the world below. Okay. Just like the soul affects your body, so the world above affects the world below, which is a constrainment of it. Okay. Is a more of a physical clothing of the world that is above that, which is more spiritual, which has more effect. All right? So the fact that the world above did not evolutionize itself down to the physical form that the world below it, and it's one step higher, so that makes it in relation to it like a soul to it. So that's the second idea. So you've got the progression of the worlds, and you got the connection of the worlds. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now Reb Chaim is going to say that there's really thousands of existing worlds, but they can be broken down into four basic categories. There's different ways to say them, but the way he's going to talk about it is that the lowest world before our world is the world of the Ofanim. He doesn't have to write down the names. He's going to talk about it. The Ofanim. This gives you a little idea to what the prayers before the Shema. They come in the form of animals. You don't have to get into this right now, what it means. It's just names. Then there's the world of Chayos. Mm-hmm. Then there's the world of Olam HaKisei, of the throne. And then the world of the Olam Atzilus, which is a world that comes directly from God's essence, obviously is the first Tzimtzum. Those are the broadest names of the worlds. There's thousands of worlds, okay, within that structure. Each world gets its nourishment from the world above it. So the world of Ofanim is controlled by the world of Chayos, which is controlled by the world of Kisei HaKavod, which is controlled by Atzilus, which ultimately is controlled by God. What comes out is the highest world is called the world of Atzilus. It's the highest one, which is ultimately responsible for everything that happens in the world. That's the general notion. Okay? I'm going to speak it out before we read it inside, so at least we'll get the idea before we leave tonight. Now here's the kicker. Two kickers come in here.
Yeah,
right? So it makes a lot... You got the idea? Every world is on top of another. It's a constrainment, that world of the world before. Obviously, whatever power in this world comes from the world above, till we come down to the bottom physical world.
Now going back.
Okay, now, here's the point. The entity of the soul of a Jewish person. Now, the body is the result of all these emanations. And the body's at the bottom of the heap. The very bottom. The most constrainment of God is your physical body.
There aren't words below?
No. We're even worse, I like to say, than a pig.
Yeah.
For a very simple reason. We're the last thing that was created in the world. Very important idea. Anything was created before was an earlier utterance. The last utterance is the furthest manifestation of this tzimtzum.
Even animals are higher.
Animals are higher, and I'll prove it to you. Because, and you can see it logically, the sun does its job all the time, bespeaks its creator. Nature can bespeak its creator. A pig? I don't know, yeah? But one thing, a pig's a lot better than a human being. Pig never denies God. Human being can deny God. Because of the physicality of himself, he'll deny God. So that's the greatest symptom, because you won't, a human being can say God doesn't exist. A pig can't do that. So when you look at the physical human being, now I know there's a lot of things that are overlapping about the mind, this and that, but it's really rooted in the physical aspect of the human being. The physicality brings out the worst in the human being. You get him to deny God. All right? So when you're looking at your body, you're at the bottom, bottom, bottom of all those worlds. We're less than anything else. We're the lowest of the low.
What about the thoughts that...
Hold on, hold on.
But it was all prepared, done to prepare for man, in other words...
Hold up, we're not finished. I hear what you're saying. But the entity of the Jewish soul, where does that come from? It does not come from the world above it, or the world above that. It comes from the highest world, the world of Atzilus. That's where the soul comes from. The soul that every Jew possesses is related to the world of Atzilus, which is the place of the root of all constraints that come exist. It's close to God. That means the human being has it within himself, the top source, which feeds into all the other worlds. Okay? Man possesses something that relates to the highest world. Therefore, it makes sense that the human being can affect all the worlds. Because all the other worlds are dependent on what goes on in the higher world. Okay? All right, that's another question. We'll have to deal with that another time.
Jewish neshama is part of God.
They lost that. They had it. They lost it. They got chunked on a lot of worlds. Okay, I'm not exactly sure where they're at. Okay, but they're not at that stage. They're clearly not at that stage. Much, much lower stage, if at any stage. Okay, this is the difference. This is what they lost. They're way down, way down, way down. You're talking about the angelic forces. That's worlds way at the bottom. Are there ministering guardian angels? So they're way low roots, very low roots. I don't know what number you're going to put it at, but it's way at the bottom. Maybe one world above. I don't know. But the Jew is way at the top. His soul hits the top. So this explains the mechanism why a human being's actions can affect so much. Because the human being possesses something that comes from the highest world. So whatever a human being does, it hits the top. And everything else is a ripple that comes down from underneath. Okay? So this becomes the first explanation where man's spiritual force comes from, a very strong place, therefore can affect so much. This is point number one. Okay? This is just explaining the mechanism, why it makes, within the system, why it can make sense.
Right.
Where's the soul coming from? I mean, what does the Torah say? God blew into man. Where's that coming from? Right from God.
Yeah.
That's the highest world. It's coming right. Isn't it God sent a telex to send a soul in? Hey, world 87, blow a soul into them. It says God himself, whatever that means. But you mean you're at the source. You're at the soul. That means the Jewish soul is in the world of Atzilus, the highest world. That's the first thing that's impacted by God. So the soul is from that place. So everything, you're at the top of the heap.
Soulfully.
The trick is to get this body to be the willful servant of the soul.
So wasn't the paradox is conjoining of the lowest physical thing to the highest?
Yeah, that's why in my Rosh Hashanah speech I said that's why human beings have a lot of identity crisis.
No wonder.
You go to psychologists, spend thousands of dollars, they tell you have an identity crisis. You look in the Torah, the first chapter of Genesis, you know that. Animals don't have an identity crisis because they don't have a soul. But they got, but not the kind of soul we have to worry about.
Wait, human, right? You can explain
they don't have any identity crisis. A pig's a pig. It's very happy being a pig.
But
human being is not happy being a human being because there is something much greater there.
But the
human being senses there's more.
The non-Jewish soul is still a real concern because...
we'll have to leave that for another time.
I mean, you know, what's worrying me, I mean, the whole thing...
Well, this is why they don't have much of an impact.
The mechanism for them losing it, you know, I mean, was you explained a couple of weeks ago, was the tower, you know, the dispersion and so on.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't seem to be, you know, such an event that will cause, you know, a transmigration, if you like,
Well, if God felt that, if you could take all that power and cause destruction to the world, God's going to want to make sure you're not going to get that power again. If their whole goal was to push God out of the world and foil the whole plans of the power, you know, if somebody is given a nuclear power and abuses that power, what are you going to let them play with afterwards? Matches? Right? I mean, they abused that power, and God says, I can't entrust you with that kind of power anymore.
Right, remove the soul completely and make them, you know, like hires.
He gave him just a little bit more. He gave him a little bit more because he needed people to help the Jew get his work done. You need somebody with, you know, animals alone, you know, you need somebody to be the link between the animals and the Jew. To be able, you need someone to come up with the cure for cancer. Let the non-Jew use his mind for that. You need someone to build bridges. Animals aren't going to do it, so you need a bridge between the rest of the world and the Jew. That's where the non-Jew fits in. He has a very important purpose. The Jew has an important job, right? But why should the Jew waste his time on technicalities? Let the non-Jewish world take care of that, and that will be their goal and purpose. The non-Jewish world comes up with the internet so that the Jew could send Torah around the world. And the non-Jew has a very important function. That's a very important function. That's a very important function. What? I know what you're saying. It's not fair to non-Jews. Right? It's very racist.
I mean, it's...
It's very... But remember the Jew accepted it. The Jew accepted the mission. Anyone who wants to accept the mission can have that kind of soul. When the non-Jew goes into the mikveh and converts, he's given that soul. He's given that power. Anyone, and the Jews only got it because they took it on. In other words, you want that power, you have to want it. And you have to want to use it constructively, and you'll have it. And anyone can have it. The Jews got it because they made a commitment to it. If you don't want to play with this non-Jewish world, we don't want those kind of stakes. We don't want to deal with nuclear spiritual energy because it could blow up on us.
They have the mountain over there.
Well, that's another story.
I heard that the neshama is coming directly from God. It's part of God.
Yeah.
Now,
it's
you
from
are
the highest,
saying that
this
it's
is
coming
from the highest,
highest.
That's the highest.
The highest
that is the closest.
Equates to God.
Just about. He's going to get into it in chapter 15 with the glass blower analogy. It's like the breath of God. That's as close to God as you can get without being God. The breath of God. I mean, that's part of God. Is it His being? It's part of it. It comes right out of His being. It's as close as you can get to God without being God. This is pretty high up there.
All Jewish people have this part of the soul. Now, how do you account for all... people who are becoming more non-observant. Does that make sense? Like going away from it. Where is their soul fitting? What's going on here?
You're misdirecting things now. That's what he's saying. You bring things to the other side. You can abuse this power terribly. You could abuse this power, and they abused it terribly. The worst human beings in the world have been Jews. Because of the power that they have.
Relative.
No, the worst human beings of the world. The worst. The worst.
The worst. I'm falling into your trap, but I'll just say...
No,
that.
I'm just saying, if you think... Who are the worst anti-Semites?
No. Oh, absolutely. No question about
it. Who are the worst
it.
Anti-Semites?
That's
Jews.
That's
Jews.
Absolutely.
Historically. Jews. The worst anti-Semites.
That's true.
They got more power to them. And they use it in the wrong way.
Yeah.
Using powers from the highest worlds in the wrong direction. It's a very powerfully negative thing. And they are always at... Who were the ones who lead the flower power generation? It was Jews.
And the communists.
Well, and the drugs, and the cults. Who are the big cult leaders? Jews. I'm not going to say there aren't some non-Jews, but Jews are at the forefront of it. Who's the guy in the main exchange plaza? Who's the rabbi there? He's a Jew.
Yeah.
A Jew for Jesus is Jews. Making more damage than the non-Jew. I mean, let's go further. Christianity came from who? From a Jew. Okay.
I mean, well, it had a lighted. I mean, it wasn't really.
But it
didn't mean.
I understand, but he was the beginning of it. He was the beginning of
it. But it was exploited.
All right? And his disciples got something that came from him.
Yeah.
Right? So that was a Jew. It could only be that way. The worst things have to be from a Jew. And then other things. So then the non-Jews will pick up and spawn off of that, but it has to come from a Jew. The worst hatred has come from Jews. I mean, that's I can give you dozens of examples of that, but that's clear, because they've got all that power, and if it's misdirected, it's terrible to have. Okay, let's just try to finish up the ideas, because it's getting late, and there are other classes to prepare. So that's the first explanation. Now we got to get to another point. Point number two, which is dovetails this, and it's called the idea of Shoresh HaNeshama, root of the soul. This is a fantastic idea as well. It means part of the neshama of the Jew is down here in your body. Okay? But there's part of the soul, as a matter of fact, the greatest part of your soul doesn't reside in your body at all. But it resides in that highest world, of the world of Atzilus. Okay? It's not like the soul originated in the highest place, but then was totally sent down here with no connection to above. That here's a chunk of Atzilus, and boom, let's put it in this body. Because then the previous logic won't work. The mechanism won't work because there's no connection to the higher world anymore.
Right.
All right? The truth is only part of your soul inhabits the body. The major portion of the soul is still in the highest world. Therefore, there's a connection between the soul down here and the root of that soul, which is in the highest world. So therefore, what you do down here connects itself to the root in the upper world, and therefore affects things in the upper world, and it translates and affects all the worlds that are beneath that. So it comes out we have two parts of the system. The fact that your soul is rooted in that highest place, and also that the greatest part of it is still there, with only a little bit being down here. And that's why, which we need much more explanation, which Rav Chaim will talk about, there's a concept in Jewish Judaism, the worst thing that can happen to a Jew is called what? Punishment. It's called what? Kares, cut off. It means the neshama here loses connection to the root soul that's above.
When you die, you're supposed to there's supposed to be a spark that's left in the body for the resurrection.
It's like
of the dead. Is this the soul?
No. Well, when you die, what happens is the root soul just picks everything back up.
But there is supposed to be a spark that's left in the body to allow it to.
That's the lose. Within the physical realm, there's a part of spirituality that's left. Okay, but you see how the soul now leaves. It's the root soul just says, come on, let's get back to the root. It's like a magnetic pull, spiritual magnetic pull. The root soul says, come on back.
Then each root soul has 613. Did you ever hear about it?
No, then there's root souls for people. There's roots, many people.